Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is an audio engineer who has toured with artists such as Drake, John Legend, Justin Timberlake, and The Roots, and he was a monitor engineer for The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. In this episode, we discuss how his personal story and his personal and professional relationship dynamics led to the creation and mission of the Roadie Clinic to empower and heal roadies and their families by providing resources and services tailored to the struggles of the touring lifestyle. We also explore the feelings that the COVID pandemic has brought up. You can find him on Instagram at Theory One Productions and at The Roadie Clinic. Here's my conversation with one of my newest friends, Paul Clemson. Hi, Paul. Thank you so, so much for joining me on the Tour Life Podcast. I'm incredibly excited to talk.
Thank you for having me, Janine.
Of course. So we originally met at the TM 101 webinar because we were talking about wellness, and there were some really cool things that we all talked about, but there was part of your experience that you shared that led you to the need to create something that was accessible, and it was a real resource for touring professionals in the music industry, which is Roadie Clinic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I definitely want to dig into that a little bit later on, but first I'd like to dive into some of the major points in the conversation, and I'd like to get to know you a little better. So tell me, did you always know that you wanted to work in the music industry?
I think so. I usually follow it up with, you know, the music chose me, you know, touring chose me. And I think when I thought that was a crazy statement and started floating it out to friends, everybody kind of around me was like, yeah, it definitely feels like that the road is a call, a place that, you know, provides some sort of family atmosphere in a weird way. We're all kind of, you know, flopping around the country in a pirate ship and conquering cities, and just kind of that freedom of being in a new place every day, that really pulled me in. But I started music when I was very young, the typical, you know, piano lessons at six and trap for the fifth grade band and do the whole awkward choosing your instrument routine with the band director, and landed on percussion. My brother was a drummer, so there was a drum set in the house. I was very exposed to kind of that, and there was already kind of this nature of loudness around the house. I didn't have to break my parents in once I got a drum set some years later, but played kind of just whoever would come over and show up, and that turned into bands through junior high and high school, but as well as formal organized band and in class, and marching band and pit band, and that pulled me into theater, and that's kind of when this whole make-believe realism took over, kind of like putting on costumes and makeup and building sets and lighting. It was just kind of like whatever you want this black hole to be, you get to make it. And I think at that time of my life, that was a good thing for young Paul in a, you know, Midwest sports eccentric town. It was just a place where I found comfort and a family, like I said. And then when a few bands came through that toured, it was a very small town. There was not a lot of culture besides the lovely teachers who brought it to us or forced it in front of us or made us go to Chicago and go to art museums on weekends and walk around and look at architecture. That was kind of the real education, was definitely not in classrooms for what I was drawn to. It was all about hands-on and being in it and hitting that mark at 7 o'clock and the pressure of the curtain going up, and that's kind of the world I formulated into before leaving my house as an adult.
That's so cool. So there was something about kind of the you know, the typical extracurriculars, which are sports, that you didn't gravitate toward. One, because music had already been a part of your life because of your brother, and then, you know, just having the accessibility for that. But what was there anything else that really made you gravitate toward the theater?
Being on stage was a lot of fun growing up. Not so much for the attention, but just kind of, the set of 25 to 50 people are kind of in it together. The moment the baton starts the song and we're all working towards, you know, the ending of the song, the ending of the evening, the state finals. It kind of played out more like a story. Music was definitely more the story of life, the story of the struggle of, you know, a group of people trying to do something with something very delicate. I mean, one oboe screeches and it's going to slow down your sonata. But I think that's what it was just this group inclusion of everybody being creative and giving their piece to it.
I love that. And, you know, it definitely, I can see how, you know, the tour family definitely becomes something like that, because you're working on it's a new day, but you're working to put on a different show that's also strangely the same.
Yes.
I see that because of those, you know, your love for working in a group, it's possible that has something to do with why you want to help people.
Yes, absolutely.
So I want to dive a little bit into that. So tell me, how does that play a part? You know, the way that you gravitate toward a group and your valuing of that group, how does it play a part in everything that you do when it comes to helping other people?
I think the biggest thing is, we've had a ton of growth in what Courtney and I are building, and massive lessons over 6 months. It's felt like, you know, a decade so far, just with the COVID umbrella over top of everything, but even functioning underneath that, once we've kind of, you know, shored up our life, not in the business, it's definitely this feeling of, you know, every plane flight you get on, put the mask on first before you help someone else. And that's been the biggest lesson is just making sure that we are ready, that I am ready to take this on, which has been a lot of unpacking, a lot of cleaning the hard drives, literally and figuratively, just taking time to deal with the things that would just get plowed under on a daily basis on the road. Like, life still goes on at home. I mean, I say you're working the moment you leave the door with a suitcase. You're kind of on 24 hours a day. Charge appropriately. Just kind of coming to this period and saying, well, if this is what we really want to do, then these are the steps necessary micro inside of ourselves, our house, our little community that we have here, our community that we're virtually have gathered, the people who've come to the campfire, as we say, and have picked up, you know, whoever's interested in whatever part, people have come along and said, we want to help with this. We want to help with this. And you guide and nurture and help and try to give them as many tools as possible to make sure they can do that job, even though it's mostly volunteer. It's been really the preparedness. And this year wouldn't have looked like that if I was on the road. COVID aside, you know, we planned on building up the clinic over the next 2 to 3 years, self-funding. COVID hit, obviously all that went away. So now we're, you know, reaching out to other organizations. A bunch have come along and donated already. But then we also have to look at the adequateness or the appropriateness of that as well and think, you know, we can't go to manufacturers at the moment. We can't go to vendors at the moment, other than to just align, let people know this is what we're building. It's not a COVID relief response. It's a multi-generational foundation that we want to build. And we can take our time doing it. And once personally I had that reality, then it made everything else easy, because then we just protect the mission and don't try to get off course by kind of the daily waves that crash up on the beach. So that's the new piece in October, coming from March kind of 16th when we fled our house and our apartment in New York and came out to a little better lifestyle. sustainable, more sustainable, and it serves the clinic's mission completely by that move. So
I love that. Like you came home because, you know, that's the place you need to be, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you brought up in your conversation with TM 101. One of the things that really stuck out to me was that Courtney mentioned that there was a point when you came home from your first big theater tour, which I think was John Legend, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she didn't know who you were.
Yeah.
She didn't recognize you. Mm-hmm. What do you think she meant?
I think it was both physical and the being, the person. You come home a little, hair's a little longer and the bags are a little deeper. And you know, if you come off of something with a high, then you bring that energy. And if you come off something that was a long slug and it was a long 3 or 4 weeks, then that energy comes in with you. Prior to that, when we lived in Nashville, I did Weekend Warrior stuff, and which was you leave Wednesday or Thursday from a Kroger or Walmart and you return Monday, and it's like you go to Mississippi and do a casino there and one on the way back, and it was all country touring. And we kind of made up a term called transition day, and that was the day you get back where the suitcase is in the wrong spot, you put the milk in the fridge in the wrong spot, you know, why are you sitting on the couch so closely? Or it doesn't matter what it is. It's just each person was functioning as a single person, even if you are extremely strong in a relationship and talking daily, which during the John Legend era was not very easy. It was, you know, shows every day. It's load in, load out every day, you know, for the most part. And then on the fifth day, like a jump to the next region. But, you know, even if you've kept up with the relationship, it still is a new being in your space who's used to being their own person away from you. I mean, you know, we have to make all our own decisions when we're on the road. So that was that re-merging that we first saw, like our first year of marriage, and have come back to it constantly to work on over the years. During that time period with John Legend, we actually went to a cabin in Vermont with no cell service, no internet, just like a black and white television and a fireplace. And we made our first lists of yeses and nos, and it was kind of, if it meets these kind of checkpoints, then yeah, we'll take the gig. If two things fall in the no category, then we would pass on it because it wasn't good enough for us. And that set up the idea way ahead of time to be prepared enough to say no. Life took over, and there was a lot of times we had to say yes. But the spirit of the yeses and nos still live on, bigger and bigger now.
And that's a huge lesson to learn, right? You know, how to really analyze the decisions that you need to make in your life and what things are important and how to prioritize them so that you don't let those things slip while you're saying yes to a million other things, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Was it always like that? Did you always know?
No. That was definitely the hard lessons learned over the years. And it came from learning how to fight fairly. I know this isn't like a couple's therapy type session, but that was definitely part of it, was learning how to fight properly and communicate better afterwards, figuring out her ways of needing time away. We figured out that she's an introvert, even though having lived a life of, younger years in the spotlight. But figuring ourselves out was huge. And then, knowing that, you know, if something goes down, then she needs her day to think about it, and I need to not fix it right away. And you work within those boundaries. And, we didn't know it until I would say probably 5 years ago when we really got good at it. And definitely COVID put that to the test, because now I'm home more than I've ever been. You know, eight hours a night of sleep has been great in my own bed. But yeah, I mean, never have we had this much time together.
So how do you think Courtney perceived you as you, like when you would come home? Like what was going, I mean, you know, and obviously we can ask her, but I'm interested in like what your perception of what she was going through was.
I was pretty clueless. It took quite a roadblock. It took a lot of just, you know, smack in the face and hey, listen. And that was the thing is I came off of, you know, a jet speed of life, and it's feels good. You're out traveling, you're seeing stuff, and you know, you're these audiences were growing. John was growing that time period too. So you're riding along in that kind of success, and your job gets easier. You figure out the band a little better, you know, all the things I would have been doing at home to improve myself and my relationship with my wife, those things spill into what I like to, you know, do with musicians. Like it's a group effort. So, I don't know what she thought, but, the people we ended up talking to let me know. So I think that was huge. And we really only had two therapy sessions, a couple sessions back then. And we were kind of right. Like it's easy for us to ride our boat once we figured out what we're up against.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I feel like that could be kind of one of those things, you know, it's like, it's very easy for us to get caught up in our own perception of the situation.
Absolutely. Right?
And one of the things that I've learned over time, just analyzing the relationships that I've been in and the things that I've gone through and what my part has been in those relationships, I did come to the realization that it's hard to see how other people feel.
Yep. Yep. And it's hard to move the lens to seeing their side because you're still holding your own perceptions.
Yeah. And do you still practice that every day? What part do you think that plays in any improvement that you've had in your relationship?
Yeah, it's a lot of replaying stuff. Like there's gems that pop out and you hold on to it. Like things that Courtney says, and it's like, that is important. I need to asterisk it. That little kind of recorder's head, like I'm always recording stuff in my head type of thing and dropping markers, not to throw a parallel to the audio world, but it works with presents as well. She'll mention something in June and for some reason it's just right there for Christmas. It's one of the superpowers from that. But yeah, definitely on a relational level, it's always kind of dropping these markers in time now, knowing the path we've been down and the path you go back down sometimes and you visit the same waypoints. It's like, oh, I've been here before. I remember this conversation 3 years ago. And I very much part of the road mentality is just keep moving forward. And that doesn't work so well. It's not like cross the bridge, burn it, move on. That may have worked when I was in my 20s, but I'm learning more and more that, you have to kind of cultivate as you go. Like every day, work backwards, work forwards, work backwards, work forwards, work backwards, work forwards. Just evaluating, how can I get better? How can I make myself more effective in this relationship or any relationship with any friends? You know, it spreads out from there.
The progress that you make in your personal life definitely spills into your work life and vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. So how would you explain like a parallel of the way that you used to treat things, you know, prior to working on your relationship in work and how you do it now?
It definitely falls under the baggage. You know, it's kind of like you threw everything in the back of the truck, closed the door and sent it on its way. And that's how I treated kind of my younger maverick years when I was the hotshot engineer who was kind of always a little better than the gig he was on. And in some pretty high pressure locations at a younger age. And that caught up to me at about 36. That's when I kind of say I ran out of talent at 36, meaning I was just a little better than everything before that and may have missed some stuff along the ways. And it happened with relationships as well. I mean, dropping into a friend's house in Denver because we're there that night and just being Mr. Rockstar and, you know, like, hey, I'm on the road and things are going great. And wearing kind of that front, in too many places, like at home or with family that I don't get to see very often. But you know, the questions always come up and I've tried to move. I try not to get past more than one or two questions about the business with anybody who I want to figure out them more, because it only just puts up that little wall of, you're next to famous people. And Courtney is just always kind of been the bubble popper, like, come back down here, step away from that. You know, you're not all that. But then at the same time, she's the one who builds me back up when a gig doesn't go the right way, or she's kind of that level line across the graph. You know, she just keeps me pulled back to the center.
You also mentioned in our conversation before that you have bipolar disorder, correct? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you take medication, correct? And you have Courtney as well, mm-hmm. Right? So we're talking about these emotions that you go through, you know, just from career, you know, because yeah, some gigs are great, some gigs aren't. And so having a person to help you mm-hmm. is definitely key. But how does having bipolar disorder play into those emotions and those experiences?
I mean, we're coming out of an era where the stigmatism is lessening. You know, more and more people are talking about mental health and what it means and what it is, or just identifying it, not really having dug into it and lived with it. And it has gotten a lot easier to talk about with colleagues, you know, obviously out to the public on all these type of things. And that helps a ton because, you know, it is a struggle daily. Sometimes days worse than others, but you can still function at a very high level creatively, you know, in a job, doing what you need to do to get done with the maintenance, with all the things that go into it that you have to just turn into part of your life.
Did you always just trust that if you manage things and if you put time into it and if you are gentle and kind with yourself, that you could manage the disorder? Or did you go through a time in your life where maybe it wasn't so hard to accept what the situation was and actually take action to improve it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's definitely, you know, having Courtney as a partner to bounce things off of, like, what is reality? What is not the emotion side? What is the fact? Even though the emotions need to have a voice in it, you know, it's just kind of like, where am I at right now? Everything around it doesn't change. In the right situation, when talking things out, it's like, take everything else and just keep shifting myself in the perspective of what the facts are of the situation. It's pretty trying. It's very exhausting sometimes. Especially in new situations where you don't quite know what the relationships are yet between people, either coworkers or you know, anybody else you have to deal with. And it's tough to kind of, you know, see reality sometimes because you're making sure you're in the right perspective because of it. And that just means, you know, taking time away and stopping letting it all play out before deciding. That's kind of been the biggest technique is just, if a decision doesn't have to be made right now, I can wait. If one does, then you have to triage it and figure out what the most important thing is. You know, what are you sticking to in your own values, in the values of the job presented to you? You know, just weighing all those type of things.
Yeah, and it can be tricky, right? Because like you said, you're dealing with different personalities, especially if you're going around from camp to camp and you're constantly working with different dynamics, different groups of people. And the real constant there is you and what your situation is. And that's really all you have control over.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you handle it when, you know, the stress does get a little bit too much and you don't have somebody who can listen to you?
Walks. I found out real quick on the last tour I was on that walking and taking pictures was the best medicine. A, you get to see the city you're in, you know, and something else draws you. Your mind doesn't take you where you're going. Your eyes kind of do, but the beauty of the city, the, you know, this area looks interesting. Those things are pulling you. And I find by the time I'm getting done, whatever it was just shrunk down to nothing, you know, and it's easier to go, oh, I'm putting you in this category. Cool. No problem. I can deal with that. Or you make the hard phone call, or you send the hard email, or, you know, or decide not to do anything. I mean, I think I tend to be the more reactive type on certain things, just because, you know, it's timing is not time to make decisions in monitor world. I'm a monitor engineer by trade. Things are very quick. You might miss that hand gesture and be like, wait, what did he tell me to turn up? So, yeah, my whole thing has just been to adding in a couple of trusted friends after that to go on these walks, and losing yourself in the city on the day off. Was huge. Definitely calling home at the next available time is great, just to run it by. The second greatest part was having an assistant who I trusted personally as well as professionally, and bouncing things off them, or having a debrief at the end of the night. That was always huge. And all these things have played into what we kind of want to do at the clinic. You know, we're just blowing up kind of how we've done things over the years to manage and keep ourselves healthy, bringing in a bit of the professionals to, you know, keep us on the right track. But it's like, here's the plan. How do we get there, everybody? And yeah, that's been the funnest part, is kind of taking things we've always done over the years and making them just bigger.
And I'm so excited that you brought that up, because now I'm going to really pick your brain.
Yeah.
So with you and Courtney, you know, you have become a team, and mm-hmm. she does handle a lot of like the day-to-day for when it comes to your, some of your major schedule or something. Could you tell me a little bit?
All of it. About 6 years ago, we were at a gig in Winnipeg, cold blood, just, it was a wintertime outdoor hockey game, which as a NHL is the coolest people to work for. The sun wasn't at the right spot in the, it was an outdoor football stadium. They have 55 yards in Canada. Like the center of the field is 55, not 50, which made me set up my monitor world in the wrong spot. But, you know, you figure it out. The Canadians come over and help you. Hey, it's over there. But yeah, an outdoor event. And I was mixing with my phone up against my ear, trying to book the next thing. She was at the hotel. We had just had not. It was one of those yes, no things where we had not seen each other in probably a month. I was bouncing between 3 and 4 artists, doing one-offs. No one was really on tour at the time, and everything worked out great. But I was like, just come to Winnipeg. We got to get caught up on receipts and business and decisions and billing and stuff. And about halfway through this phone call, I'm like, just call Courtney. We'd merged our calendars. I kind of kept my own for a long time. And, you know, a lot of these clients would make us do the travel as well, which was fine. You know, we can handle that stuff. But yeah, so then it just ended up being on that phone call. Just call Courtney. She knows where I'm at, where I'm going to be. If I can do it, you'll get an answer quicker. And then I was just allowed to just mix and, you know, be in the gig. And that lasted until, you know, March 13th this year.
I can totally see how, you know, when you, and I've never been married. Okay. So I can't really say, you know, exactly how it's supposed to go. Right. I've been in long-term relationships, and you know, something that I found, at least, you know, when I was with somebody who was touring in the music industry, is that it definitely seemed like they had a lot to do. There was a lot on their shoulders a lot of the time. But it was kind of hard to relinquish like some of that control.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
It was super easy. By then we had already merged so much of life and worked so hard to even just get to the point of complete and total openness and trust. Because the slightest amount of, you know, you're in Paris, why is it so bad? And I've gotten those phone calls, and it's like, well, I've seen the back of an arena and, you know, a dumpster where I lean to eat my sandwich during a 5-minute break, and then the inside of a semi because we put everything in it and now it's leaving. I didn't go see the Eiffel Tower. I, you know, so there's that, we fought for a long time on how things look and what the reality is. And again, it takes, you know, the communication skills that you've built over time. Because sure, you got the skill, but then you throw the emotion in at the moment and the skill kind of drifts a little and you have to pull it back in and say, no, wait a minute, we're out of bounds here. We need to go back inside the right bounds to have this discussion properly. And if, and you know, luckily now, if it takes time, we have the time. But back then it's like, I got 3 minutes till I have to be back inside this, you know, on stage to do a show, and you just wrecked my world. Throwing no shame, she'll tell the same story about me. So, but that was stuff that we definitely had to work through, because then the next day has its own new challenges, and who knows what, you know, roll the dice back home looks like when the phone rings.
I love that. And that's kind of, you know, like you said, you were building your marriage, you know, throughout. And so it kind of facilitated, you know, that kind of letting her in and letting her take over some things. But was there a time, and you can go ahead and like relate it to, you know, just the way that your marriage, I guess, evolved. Mm-hmm. But when I feel like sometimes when we have like our own projects, you know, again, it could be a little bit difficult to let somebody in, and to accept help. And I think that's one of the major themes that have been going around with, you know, with a lot of the conversations that we've all been having, you know, being able to really know when to trust someone and then also when to ask and accept help.
Yes. It's definitely a thin line, because, you know, a lot of what I've seen is people, you know, you put up the front, you put up that like kind of brand front door on yourself, as you, cause we are all our own individual businesses on the road. Even though if we work for somebody, it comes down to, you know, you're your own business, because the moment that show is done, the tour is done, you don't benefit from whoever you work for's brand becoming bigger. The way you benefit is doing a really good job so that people will call you back. So yeah, there is a bit of that, like you have to be your own person on the road and protect your real estate in ways. And that gets into some weird, you know, interpersonal things between crew members. So, you know, it takes a few days, with a new crew to figure out, really, to say who you can trust. And even if you can't, for me, it's like, well, how do I win them over? You know, it's kind of that monitor, engineer, people pleaser gene of, I still want to be friends with this person. And if whatever they're going through that makes them decide their ways of decision-making, you know, meet that person where they're at, has been the biggest thing. And I just study humans, just mostly because with the singer, they can look and give you the look. And it determines on what you're going to touch on the console. It could be nothing, but I mean, just over the years of studying humans on stage and how it pertains to my job, it rolls into, you know, just trying to figure out what to make them tick. Why, you know, why do they do things a certain way? Is it better or worse than how someone else does it? You know, like, those are all things you roll around. It's a lot of time on buses. And at the same time, I want to find a common ground and meet him there on it. Like, you don't have to agree on everything, but find something to talk about. You know, that's the connection.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, it's that human connection, right? That allows you to even begin to trust anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what have you learned about humans?
Every time you figure it out, it changes. And part of that is just the seasonal living that we're all in. I mean, I was in one season at NBC and immediately into a different season a day later, jumping on a world tour. That was probably one of the big things. I wouldn't have changed anything up until now in the last 20 years, but there were definitely times when I should have taken a break. I mean, and it goes back to like, yeah, why does it take me 3 weeks to book a dental appointment when I'm off here in town and it's right there? I mean, there's something built into kind of roadies being good where their feet at or feet are at that plays into, no, I'm good. I can take care of myself. You know, like, yeah, it's throbbing, but you know, I'm not on the floor yet.
That's hilarious because I totally went through that with my ex. Like, yes. He literally was like, I'm just going to have it pulled out. It doesn't even matter. I'm like,
that's where I was at the other day. I was like, just pull it out. This is right. I don't need it. But there's something to be said about kind of that, I wouldn't say curmudgeon, but just, yeah, we plant our feet. We're good where we're at. You know, when we walked in, where we were standing didn't exist. And tonight when we leave, it doesn't exist again. But for those 6 hours where we were standing, that's where we're at. You have to be good with it.
A lot of living in the moment, right?
Very much so, which can be a drug.
Tell me more about that.
One of my good friend's mentors was a tech at one time. He just is like, the road is everything that we don't want to be home about. It's just, it allows us to be whoever we want to be. You can do whatever you want to do. I mean, up until you can't do your gig and then you're going home. But there's just a lot of carny pirate lifestyle that you can fall into. The thing I'm seeing, though, you know, is the industry has become so technologically advanced. This year would have been a monstrous year for ticket sales in the industry, in touring. When we come back, it's going to be crazy to see what it looks like. I mean, I don't see just a lights going on, here we go. But as it creeps back to, you know, going back into arenas and having procedures and the world's a little safer, which no one can predict. So everybody put your calendars away and figure this part of it out. The infinity till nothing part of it. You need to figure this out, because if you don't, when we turn back on, it will be worse. But yeah, he was just kind of saying how everything on the road is every reason we don't want to be home. And I think there's good in everything. That one's the more dangerous one to play with, to kick around. More and more, I think that we need to have our own mission statements inside, or else you can have mission. If there's no goal, no plan, then you're just wandering. And that's fine for some people at some points. But to really be a contributing person to, you know, this industry, it's like you got to have some of those yeses and nos in place before you get on the battlefield.
Yeah, that whole mission statement thing is really interesting, because I think that's almost one of the, you know, like, if we're all living through life and this is a video game, right? Mm-hmm. That's like one of those major missions, right? Like, first figuring out what your values are, and that way you have your why, and then everything that you do, you can use that as your compass.
Yes.
How has that played out in your life?
It's definitely made every decision easier in the past 5 years while on the road. And there's like, you know, a billion micro decisions every day. Sometimes when I've held on to the why too tightly, it's forced me into alienating people. Like, if you hang on to the ideal too hard, then that goes back into the just having a conversation and figuring it out. I'm definitely one to dig my heels in on the stubborn side if I believe in something pretty strongly. And sometimes that isn't the right thing to do, but the journey is really the fun part. That's all we have, because it changes every second. Every second of the day it changes where we're going, where we're headed. And you can change your mission statement. I fully feel that, but to not have one at all is very dangerous.
Yeah, what happens when you don't have one?
Whatever passes by, you grab it and do it. And it's very easy to slide quickly. We get put into combinations where you're with someone who has already experienced and dealt and had and knows and can slow down the train if they need to when it comes to certain situations. And if you're first seeing that, and this is your first time, the peer pressure is pretty hardcore, and then not because it's active peer pressure. It's just, again, with your gig, you want to fit in, you want to seem normal, you want to uphold what kind of the fabric is around you. And if you're not able to stand up and walk away, you know, it's a very slippery slope.
Have you seen a lot of people fall into that? Or has the majority of your experience been people who figured it out?
I think it's, just to do a quick survey over the years, I've more lately seen people who are figuring it out, but having been through the first part. More and more, and maybe that just comes with, you know, getting older and those are the people who are around me. But yeah, it feels like there's a lot of my friends are on the backside of figuring it out. And I've already gone through the front side. The reason why this part becomes so forefront is without me knowing, two of my nephews have become roadies. And I probably would have talked them out of it. You know, it's like kind of that thing like, oh, go be an accountant, son. You don't want to be on the road. But they saw my love for it, which I didn't think I was evoking, or not the love of just wearing the jacket, being on the tour, having the resume, but the love of wrapping the cable and neatening the stage. And, oh, there's that water bottle that's now rolling around on the stage and my bass player is about to jump on it. You know, it's like all those, I call it stagecraft or gig vision, where I've looked at so many stages from stage left that if you can just glance up and see if everything is right, nothing's out of focus in the frame, or nothing, the fabric is completely, you know, in order. And then there's that one time you're like, whoa, that's a red light on someone's belt pack. We need to change a battery as they run by. It's just kind of, they get the beauty of what we do on a stage and no one sees it up front. Or if they do, it's part of the show. You know, it's just kind of like, oh, the cymbal stand fell over. Someone runs out and fixes it. You tell that story every night about how whoever came to Des Moines, Iowa and played, you know, the club, the cymbal stand fell over. It's just part of the experience. But for them to jump in this business as well, along with 8,000 other passing comments, solidified what Courtney and I are doing, because we want to give them as much of what we've learned over 20 years to them in the very beginning. They're just 2 years in. One's 3 years in, gone to college, worked at House of Blues for a long time in Chicago, went out on his own, COVID hit. The other one moved to Chicago, was working for some of the, you know, the sound houses, doing theaters and stuff and talking heads at hotels, COVID hit. But that just empowers us even more to make sure that on the backside, we can prepare them for whatever else comes up next.
Yeah. And I mean, nothing like this has ever happened before.
Not in the tour, not to the touring industry.
How does that make you feel?
I mean, if I sat down and drew the arc, I could probably tell you where all of my friends are on it just by having had so many conversations. But it was the loss of identity, the mechanicals of how do we survive now with no money coming in. You know, what are the options, which has worked out pretty well in our case. And we're trying to help everybody else navigate, you know, the resources that are out there from other organizations. But then kind of once it did kind of move past the first few steps, it turned into, you know, opening up the vault and starting to dig through kind of all those things you just cauterized, you know, at the end of a night or at the end of a run or with Courtney or with a family member, you know, just the things you just had to just cut off at the limb, because at the time there was no way your body could take on the shock of dealing with it. And I know some people who in the past have gone through even worse things, you know, being overseas for a parent's death and not making it home for the funeral as part of our industry. So, yeah, that was kind of the next step, was digging through everything, and very paralyzing days of swing, you know. And then once you kind of create that umbrella to keep COVID out, functioning underneath, and then getting really nitpicky because it's a safe place inside that, and all with help from Courtney and other very much smarter people, you know, just talking, calling people you haven't talked to in a long time. Even that's hard. You feel like a bit of survivor's guilt that we're doing okay for the most part, you know, at the time, right now, today at, you know, 11:45, we're fine. But reaching out to other people has been hard too, even though it's necessary, you know, because it's like, what's the first thing you say? How you doing? You don't know what you're going to get. It may be great. Hey, I love the break. You know, I had money in the bank. I could save up to do this. Or, holy crap, the house is about to go. The car is gone. The wife's out the door and there's no food. So it's very heavy because of the possibilities of, you know, whichever way things can go right now.
Yeah, all the uncertainty. And, you know, you're totally right about that survivor's guilt. It's a very loaded concept, I think. And, you know, there was a time that I mentioned where, you know, I was able to work from home, and because I was teaching high school. And so I was just able to work from home when it happened. Mm-hmm. Nothing really changed for me. Everything was great, actually. Things got better. I didn't have to go anywhere. You know? And something that really tore me up was seeing and being aware and having the time to really witness what other people were going through.
Yes.
And I think that was really like the hardest part for me.
Because you're trying to help, but you don't know how. And it's overwhelming because it's everywhere. If we had one friend who, you know, broke his leg and couldn't gig anymore or whatever, and it's like, well, you can, a bunch of us can come around that. But, you know, when every door you turn to is shut because those people can't go do their jobs. And then it starts sliding up. And that was March, April, May, June, July. Mid-July was when you start seeing it sliding up kind of the totem pole from kind of us daily, you know, foot soldiers into the companies. And you see owners, you know, trying to figure out how 140 people are going to exist. And that, I would not want that amount of pressure ever. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah. So. Oh man. Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of feelings and I ended up finding myself in a place where, you know, then I had to make it work because I wasn't going to teach in high school when we went back to school. Right.
So, no.
You know, but I figured it out and I have been able to actually really redirect myself using my why, which is something that we've talked about because a lot of us, like you said, you're kind of, you find something that you do and you're living in the moment and you're just going. And then right now everything is just like, stop, figure it out. So if you were to start today, like if today was the first day that you ever decided, I want to work in the music industry, what do you wish you would have known, that somebody would have told you?
It's funny because, I've used this one for a long time and now it applies. Like I've told, oh yes, Paula Clemson thinks you should do this. And now it's like, well, read the book, kid, because I'm pointing at myself. the kind of two parameters I tell someone starting out is two, and then a third little side thing. The biggest concept is be the best in your own fishbowl and then make sure you choose the right fishbowl. Essentially, that's where you're going to be healthiest and happiest in this business. And what that means is, you know, I started off in church with a 8-channel console, very young. And first Sunday is like, get the kid away from that. And the next Sunday is like, where'd that kid go? You know, it was like the first kind of drum sets showing up on stages and keyboards and guitars showing up. And, you know, my brain got that, understood that. And, understood what this little console thing did and why. And, you know, anybody jumping into it, it's like, you need to go where you're happiest working, whether that's the genre or the place or the people. And then really protect and build that. And if you hit the ceiling, have enough to jump appropriately, just not to jump. And then become the best in that fishbowl. And up is not always the right direction. we've definitely found that out, where you keep wishing for the big and it's never better. It's never, the things that irk you will only get worse or larger. So find kind of that happy place where you can exist. And if that's a certain town, make it that town and design your life so that you can exist doing that and still have time and money to be a human. And if that is the big arena tours and that's what gets you going, be the best at it. You know, amass the tools, the skills to be the best at that. It is attainable. It's all attainable. There's nothing stopping anybody to get to where they want to be, especially in this business. There's tons of space. You can create your own reality no matter. There's radio, television, live recording, now podcast and live streaming. I mean, that's a whole, live streaming has not been tapped yet. I know that everybody's doing whatever they're doing, but there's a whole, well, just jump on Twitch and watch someone playing a video game. I mean, touring and music is now up against way larger beings because of COVID. I mean, essentially, it's like turning the TV off for 6 months. What are people going to go do? Outside bike riding? You know, like, it's always, the pendulum always swings back to the center. So, find whatever it is that really gets you going and be the best in it, in that little corner of this industry.
You're absolutely right. You know, I think the sky is absolutely the limit, and I think you can make anything happen. I mean, we have every opportunity to, you know, like I am, I'm in my bedroom right now.
Cheaper than ever to do what we do. Yep.
But, you know, something else that we mentioned earlier on too, was that whole element of asking for help and accepting it.
Mm. Yes. Especially as a young up and comer, I know I'm talking the downward way. I think that came up when my nephews popped in my head. But even on the other side of it, gosh, this is not the time to have any qualms about asking for help for anything at all. A buddy hit me up, I think kind of in a panic the other night, and we were busy doing another one of something, taping something or whatever. People were over for work, and finally got to it the next day and got through the conversation. And he's like, man, it's just good talking. You're so smart. And like, I just followed you along the conversation and was kind of repeating back what you were saying just so you could hear it yourself. You know, you had all the answers. It was just all over the place. And yeah, I mean, even with the clinic, we've pulled back a little. We hit a huge awareness campaign. We have been helping out people as we can, kind of some high level cases that just come to us by whoever brings them to us, which has been the best part of it. Seeing who shows up to the campfire, both on the help side and the needing help side. But I think that's just part of it is taking and finding a friend, you know, one a week and do the Zoom thing or the phone call. People you haven't talked to in forever. You don't know what they're going through, you know, like lose all of kind of where you think things are at and just reach out. Because no one knows, no one gets it like what we're going through. It's, you know, aunts and uncles understand what we're doing now. You know, as much as you can tell them how it feels, the only ones who understand it are the ones who are going through it. And that's who we have. We're roadies. We survive. That's what we do.
I love it. Thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing some of your story with me.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll talk soon. Bye.
See you.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Paul Clemson. 1. Boundaries are incredibly important. Make sure you have a list of yeses and nos. This will set you up to accept the gigs, which will move you toward your career goals while also prioritizing your mental and physical health. 2. You have to cultivate as you go. It's incredibly important to replay situations in order to learn from them. Don't just burn bridges and move forward. Always work to be self-aware and build on the lessons that you've been taught. 3. Allow your partner into your world. A lot of the animosity that can form in relationships comes from lack of communication. Show them what it's like to be you and let them in. 4, figure out your why. It'll work as a compass for everything you do so that you can truly enjoy the journey, even when times are tough. And 5, be the best in your own fishbowl and make sure you choose the right one. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Paul a follow on Instagram at Theory One Productions and at The Roadie Clinic. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow The Tour Life on Instagram at The Tour Life Podcast.